Hi, I'm Dave Danielson. Welcome to The Long View. Today, our guest is John Buford. John, welcome.
Thank you, Dave.
Captain John Buford, actually, the Deputy Bureau Chief for New Hampshire's EMS Service, Emergency Medical Services. And what we're going to talk about today is the warm zone. Perhaps you've wondered, and if you've thought about, heard about, the idea of active shooters. Certainly, a lot of the troubles that we've seen over the course of the last 5 to 10 years with shooters going into malls, shooters going into schools, shooters going into business, activities like that, but not necessarily just shooters. Any kind of activity that's going to try to take down multiple people are of concern to emergency responders. And John, I welcome you today to talk about this subject. It's not one that's an easy subject for most folks to learn about, but the fact is that the emergency responders have been prepared or are preparing for these kinds of situations.
Correct. Thanks, Dave.
Yep. How are they preparing?
So at the Bureau of EMS, we've started the process of developing education programs that will provide fire department and emergency medical responders, as well as some law enforcement folks that are working in the medical realm, some knowledge surrounding how to work within an environment that may or may not be potentially safe. So the warm zone. So you start with a cold zone, which is there's no threat. It's reasonably safe. The reasonable person would define it as safe. There's no threat there. Then there's the warm zone, which is the place in between the cold zone and the hot zone. And the hot zone is the place where there is a threat. There's an imminent threat. Somebody is there hurting people. And that place in between, there's security measures in place so that they're able to, the providers, the EMS and fire folks that are going into that location are able to, they're relatively safe with law enforcement security.
Now, I implied, as we started out, I implied that it's not just bullets and guns that make an area unsafe, that in fact a lot of gases, toxic materials, explosive materials could be considered in that hot zone.
Yep, bladed weapons, many things. So the active shooter definition by Department of Homeland Security doesn't actually have weapon involved. It just talks about killing or intent to kill people in a confined and populated space. So it could be anything. Another term that's coming to light as of recent is active threat. So there's an active threat to people or their lives.
Okay.
2%-ish of the 160 active shooter events that the Department of Homeland Security or the FBI researched, about 2% used IEDs or some other mechanism.
So an IED would be explained as a
improvised explosive device. So
which
something
would be similar to
a bomb.
What we saw in Boston.
Boston, yeah.
Okay, so it's a homemade bomb for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. They saw them in Boston. They saw them at Columbine with propane tanks modified. So,
is that becoming a bigger issue when it comes to these kinds of events?
It's certainly something to keep our eye on, but it's not, like I said, 2% of the 160. So about two of the events they utilized IEDs.
Well, let's talk again. The long view is looking at the long-term implications, and we have to assume that these kinds of events will continue into the future.
Yeah, they certainly have seemed like they've become more frequent. We're seeing more and more about them in the news and media. So we have to assume that they're going to continue, and there's going to be a day when it comes to New Hampshire, and we'll have to respond in some manner.
And I read somewhere, I believe, that there are only 5 states, and New Hampshire being one of them, that this has not happened at yet. Is that correct?
Sounds very correct, yeah.
Yep. Good. Well, when we're looking for these life-threatening events, certainly the first responders are exposed to these things as well.
Yes.
And one of the things they're exposed to is something that people don't talk that much about is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Correct.
Which is a mental health issue.
It is.
And again, folks don't want to talk about that. Can you, how does a first responder prepare for that?
Mental readiness, healthy, becoming healthy or staying healthy, personally being healthy and being ready to go to those events. However, all the preparation in the world can't prepare you for the event that's going to cause you to have your own mental stress. So you just need to be prepared and recognize the signs and symptoms in yourself and your coworkers and brothers and sisters that you work with. So knowing the signs and symptoms so that I can help you if you were to start exhibiting those signs and symptoms. And awareness, talking about it. For a long time it's been just, you know, suck it up, deal with it.
Right.
That's not the culture anymore. We're shifting very much towards, Dave, I see these things. Is there something I can do to help? Or are you okay? Do you want to talk about something? Those kind of things.
Right. Does it come from, I remember the firefighters talk about this idea of if we can't save ourselves, we can't save anyone.
Could very much come from that cultural norm of we are that person. And we're finding that we're human. And we need to deal with our own mental safety and health.
Tell us how do you train for it? How do you train for evacuation in a warm zone? How do you train for you've got people mortally injured? The term triage, which many people probably haven't heard unless they were involved probably in military.
Mm-hmm.
But what is triage, and does triage occur in a warm zone?
So triage basically means to sort. To sort people, and in our case medically, it's to sort people by their injuries and who's mortally wounded the most and who's going to need care the fastest. So yes, it happens in a warm zone. That's one of the purposes to move medical people into that location, is so that the law enforcement folks that are dealing with their law enforcement issues don't have to spend a lot of time triaging, moving patients to what's called a casualty collection point, or a place in the building where we move people and give them a place to be that's safe. There's a security mechanism there, there's medical providers there, and then they move from there out and be evacuated to ambulances to move to the hospital.
Well, the downside, I think, for a person who may have just heard about this, is an indication that if there's triage and an emergency medical responder, an EMS person, goes into that situation and finds a person who's very badly injured, they might just say, "We're going to leave this person."
Yeah, it is a sad reality, but that could potentially happen if they're at a point where they may not be saved. They may be left for the next round. They'll get evacuated. They'll get moved eventually, but it matters. What matters is moving through the algorithm of is this person viable, and then trying to do the best you can.
So the higher probability of your surviving is going to get you treatment faster.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's the theory behind the triage piece. Yeah.
Okay. Again, when you put an EMS team into a warm zone,
sure,
you are, for all intents and purposes, exposing that EMS team to mortal danger.
Potentially.
How do they, A, prepare? How do they protect themselves as they go into this event?
Sure. So preparation's education, getting themselves prepared by educating themselves in what is a rescue task force and what medicine should they be practicing in this limited
warm zone. What is a rescue task
warm
force?
Zone. So a rescue task force is comprised of two or more law enforcement officers and two or more fire EMS personnel who will enter behind another law enforcement contingent that's gone in, called the contact team. Those individuals will go in and work towards the threat, where this team will go in and work through the folks that have been injured.
Okay. So if somebody's listening to this program and they can visualize then two into a warm zone, a place where they suspect that there's folks who are injured, then two law enforcement people might go in first. These are folks who are armed,
yes,
and protected. They have personal protection equipment on.
Yep.
And they'd move into that zone, and behind them would be the EMS people?
Behind so the next team that would go in would be another two law enforcement officers,
okay,
one in the front, one in the back. And in the middle, there would be comprised of a group of medical or fire and medical personnel for medical use or evacuation purposes.
Okay, so those EMS people that are going to be in that cadre are going to be protected as well. They'll have
Sure.
personal protection equipment as well.
They would not be armed,
Right.
but they would be vests, ballistic vests, very similar to what law enforcement would be wearing, as well as ballistic helmets, which very similar to what law enforcement would be wearing.
Okay. Have there been many EMS people or firefighters killed in response to this kind of an event?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. So this is in preparation for and to avoid any kind
Yeah.
of thing like that.
So there's a statistic of 28 events out of 28% of the 160 events that the FBI studied that involved gunfights, and I forget the exact number, but there were not a large number of law enforcement officers that were injured. So there's some relative safety in this warm zone area.
Right.
We don't want to call it a cold zone because there is still danger there.
Right.
There's the potential that this active threat will move around one of the law enforcement teams and come back in, and that's where your cover and concealment come in. Which so your cover is a place that will stop a bullet, and concealment is something that will hide you from the threat.
Right.
So that's where some of this knowledge, this extended knowledge and the education goes, is how do you, if your law enforcement security piece gentlemen say, or ladies say, hey, you need to move and get cover. You know what cover is. You need to get concealed. Okay, you know what conceal is.
Right. Well, when we talk about that, actually, that is in response to the active shooter training that's being done right now across the state for state employees, but also a lot of large companies now are having active shooter training as well. Schools are going through active shooter, and active shooter training has those three things that you were just speaking of: deny, and defend. Right?
Correct. So the CRAZE training, or the civilian response to active shooter events, talk about the three things that you just mentioned, the avoid, the deny, and defend. So the first thing you would do as a civilian is avoid the threat.
That's called
So
run.
it can be run, fight, and hide is another
Right, right,
three-term
right.
piece, depending on which program you go through. This particular program actually comes out of the Texas State University, where we got the beginning parts of our training that we put together.
Right.
Avoid, go find a place, shut the door, try to lock it, barricade it. Deny them entry, so barricade it, lock it, lock the door. Find a way to barricade yourself into the location you're at, and at some point you may have to defend yourself, and that's where the threat has made it past your attempts to avoid or deny them access to you, and you would have to defend yourselves against them.
Okay, at which point that becomes now a hot zone.
Yes, that would be your hot zone, and that
Okay.
would not be somewhere where we would be looking to put fire and EMS personnel. That's a law enforcement only location, that hot zone.
Okay, because of the danger,
Yes.
obviously. Okay.
Yes.
Force protection,
Okay.
something that is called for when you go into this warm zone. What is force protection? How is it used, and how is it referred to in this particular atmosphere?
So force protection would be the protection or the protection or preservation of health within the teams that are working. So the law enforcement, fire, and EMS folks, and how we're going to protect their or preserve their health. It kind of takes many directions, but one of the best things that we can do is prepare the law enforcement officers that are going to go in on a contact team to be able to take care of their buddies. So buddy aid, they call it. And that allows them to be able to provide first aid to their buddy when and if they should unfortunately get injured.
Okay, so again, as we come back to the point of the long view and talking about ideas for the future, we stated a little earlier that we can anticipate that these kinds of situations, unfortunately, are going to continue,
Sure.
perhaps even in more severity than what we've already experienced.
Potentially.
Okay, so understanding that, then, what we want to try to do, at least in our program today, is to make people aware of the fact that first responders, particularly police and emergency medical responders and firefighters, are being trained to address this issue?
Yes, law enforcement's doing their own set of programs. They that are very similar, and the program path that we took is mirroring their programs, so that we're on a similar page across the state. So we're taking similar language, similar knowledge, similar feel. The programs all came, their genesis all came out of the same university. So we're putting everything together so it has the same feel, so that when law enforcement talks about what a casualty collection point is, fire and EMS have the same knowledge. And those are the things that will make us better prepared, because all of our folks will be on the same page, and they'll be able to come into a command post or a place where all of the incident commanders gather, and they'll be able to talk on the same page. They'll be able to understand how they integrate, and it's not a fire incident, it's not an EMS incident, it's not a law enforcement incident, it's all of our incident, but who has the lead right now, and who's going to work through the problems that we're going to encounter.
Right. This sounds very much like incident command management, ICM.
Very much. Uh-huh. Very much incident command. And the third program, we're working on three different programs. So the first program is an awareness program. It's currently up on our online platform for our responders to view. We're working on a second program, which is an operations level. It's more of a hands-on program for a day. And then the third program is a program that already exists through the Texas State University Alert Center, called the ATURC, Active Threat Integrated Response Course. That program actually integrates law enforcement, fire, and EMS in command center operations, so that they understand how to work together better and what each other's strengths and weaknesses are, so that they can work in places to make the actual incident move more efficiently.
And I think some folks may have heard or understood what incident command is. But can you give them just a quick thumbnail of what incident command is and why it's important as far as response is concerned? And it's graded. You can talk about it being graded from a very small event to a very large event.
Sure. So it's definitely scalable, so that you can use it on your everyday call, motor vehicle accident. Somebody's going to establish command. So it's a structure to run an incident with maximum efficiency. Basically, it's an organizational structure where you have a small span of control, 5 to 7 people, and they each have a leader, and eventually the whole situation has a leader. So it's kind of a pyramid effect,
right,
to allow for hopefully decisions to be made in the best place possible within the situation. It's somebody that's not physically standing right next to a person that's making a decision,
right,
may not be able to help them make a decision the best way, so they need to be able to communicate. So there's that structure to help them communicate.
So we have common language.
Common language, very
much. We have a common structure. We have common tactics.
Yes.
So that we go into these warm situations then, the idea is to maximize the protection for the individuals who are injured, mm-hmm, to get them out of that situation, and also to give multiple ideal protection to the folks who are making that run into that area.
Yeah, there's three core goals,
yes,
of our active shooting or active threat education, or our warm zone education. Our first one is not stop the killing, but the law enforcement's would be stop the killing. Then there's stop the dying and organize. So stop the killing is when they move, law enforcement moves to the threat and neutralizes the threat in whatever way they have to. The second piece is to stop the dying, and that's where either law enforcement, fire, or EMS, whoever moves past the person, initiates initial first aid just to get them, stop the bleeding, for example. People can bleed out very quickly, 4 to 5 minutes. That's not a lot of time when we're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
So then organize. So the organized piece is bringing everybody together and being able to have that organized, unified response to this event, mm-hmm, so that we're not having fire stage over here and EMS stage over here and law enforcement stage over there, and nobody's talking to each other, and then it becomes troublesome to be able to move people together.
Right. Now, what is the role now, then, of we've talked about emergency medical services kind of growing in its application and its professionalism and being able to get out and get into the field to address some of these issues. But that's integrated, right, with the hospitals and with ambulances, which aren't just, what were they used to call them, meat wagons, right, where you used to just throw the body into the thing and move it to the hospital.
Yeah.
Ambulances now are much different than they have been in the past.
Sure.
And so do the hospitals and the ambulances play an integrated role when we're talking about the warm zone and how the response is to the warm zone?
Yeah, the current education or thought process is that we move people from the casualty collection point to the hospital. So move them through to an ambulance rather than your traditional triage that moves them from the casualty collection point to a sorting area, and then from the sorting area by their triage status or what their sickness level is, whether they're really sick or not so sick, how they'll move to the hospital. The goal is to move them right out of the casualty collection point. If you look statistically, the median for number of people injured in 80 researched events was two wounded, two killed. So a total of four people wounded, two mortally, two not. With that, the thought process is moving these people faster rather than keeping them, keep moving them multiple times, move them once so that they go. And that's kind of where that ambulance piece fits. That's one of the reasons why we're using, why we like to use a lot of first responders, firefighters, other emergency medical personnel, law enforcement, those folks that are able to get into that warm zone and move people out so that the EMS providers that are there are able to work in the ambulance to the hospital.
I see.
So you're not stranding an ambulance that can't move.
So again, people should be very comfortable knowing, perhaps not comfortable knowing that this situation that we're experiencing today is not going to go away real soon.
Correct.
That it's going to be around for a while. And when we say that, that's that emergency, the dynamics of the active shooter, the event that's going to occur, there are some really tough scenarios, as we both know, that have been developed over the course of time.
Yeah.
But the upside is that the emergency medical services, the responders, the first responders, are preparing for this so that they can respond to safely take care of the people in our state, in our location, our local communities, in the country, because this, again, is the incident command system is actually a national program, right?
Correct.
Okay. It looks like we've only got a few minutes left. Perhaps you can give us a little bit about your background, and I apologize that I didn't do this on the onset, because people are probably wondering, how did you get to be an expert at what we're talking about? Could you give us a little bit of background?
Sure. So I've been a paramedic for about 17 years. I've been in the emergency services, starting in the fire service at the ripe age of 15. And so I've been in the fire service about 24-ish years. And within that time, I've served on a couple of different tactical teams as a tactical paramedic, and taken several programs within the realm of tactical paramedicine, which this is not. This is not tactical medicine. It's street level providers, it's street level law enforcement, street firefighters, not people, street EMS people, not folks that have gone on to take additional training as a tactical provider. I've been a flight paramedic as well. So I have a fair amount of experience in the realm of medicine, and some specific experience with an education within the tactical realm. So these events will quickly unfold into tactical events. However, most of the teams in the state of New Hampshire can't mobilize fast enough to get to one of these events and actually deploy.
And when you're talking about the experience you have, the medical experience, people should understand that the emergency medical experience and the medical experience that they normally know from their doctors or nurses isn't exactly the same. It's very specialized when we start to talk about emergency medical services.
Yeah, our specialty is moving people, and when we move them, very specifically taking care of time-sensitive life risks. So
okay, that's good. Last couple of moments that we have, what would you want people to know? We've got 3 minutes left and I'm going to let you just go ahead. What do you want people to know?
I think the biggest thing that I'd like people to take away is the knowledge that we're prepared. We're moving forward with preparation. Law enforcement's being prepared. Fire departments are being prepared. EMS agencies are being prepared. Equipment grants are being utilized so that people can purchase protective equipment, because it is cost prohibitive and it lasts. It does have a shelf life. So a very expensive vest can quickly become something that isn't able to be utilized because it was beyond its shelf life. So these things are in place so that we can prepare and move forward with education and getting folks educated so that we're able to respond in a very efficient manner and be able to take care of the folks that the person that's injuring them, law enforcement is taking care of the person that's doing the deed, and we're going to be able to be there to help take care of those people victims. that were victimized.
Yeah. Okay. And in that regard, I just had a question relative to the shooter, to the people themselves, the victims themselves. And by gosh, I've forgotten what the question was. You know, it's getting to be that time of my life, I guess, when the question, I better write down the question. Well, I want to thank you for being here
anytime
today. I appreciate it very much. And letting folks know that there is preparation, that there is an attempt to take care of folks in these situations where we don't know what they are. We call them black swans, is what we've talked about. We'll talk about that in a later episode of things. But black swans are those situations where unpredictable, totally unpredictable. 9/11, for example, was an unpredictable situation. Boston Marathon, an unpredictable situation. Yet we've got to be prepared for unpredictable situations. And it sounds to me like the emergency medical services and the police and fire as a team are trying to prepare themselves so that they can give optimal service to folks.
Very much so.
Thanks, John, for being here today. Thanks. Thanks for being on the Longview. And thank you for being on Longview tonight, watching Longview, and being with us for this discussion. Please know that you are being taken care of. People are prepared to take care of you in these kinds of situations. We can't be over anxious. We've got to live our lives. And knowing that the folks from the emergency medical services are prepared gives us that preparation. Thanks again for watching.